WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The General Assembly gavels into session. Governor Northam delivers his final address. And the new Republican Speaker of the House from the Shenandoah Valley takes issue with what Northam had to say about Virginia's history. We conclude our series on Charlottesville city government with a look ahead to what the turmoil of the last few years may cost taxpayers. And we have a report on the latest changes at the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, January 13th. Last fall, Jason Kessler and two other white supremacists were found guilty of conspiring to commit violence during the 2017 Unite the Right rally. The Daily Progress reports they have now filed motions to overturn the jury's verdict. Kessler, Nathan D'Amigo, and Identity Europa are among more than a dozen defendants in the lawsuit. The jury ordered them to pay more than $26 million to nine people injured in the rally. Kessler's and D'Amigo's attorney argues that the plaintiffs failed to prove his clients entered into a conspiracy. In the first two parts of our series on Charlottesville's city government, we reported on how the Unite the Right rally, its aftermath, and dynamics at City Hall have contributed to the city's current municipal woes. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee has this follow-up report on the city's decision to hire a consulting firm to provide city management services and what that could cost taxpayers.
The city organization has been under extreme stress in recent years, reads a request for proposals issued by Charlottesville in December. A seemingly endless feedback loop of public office casualties has prompted the city to hire a firm, the Robert Bob Group LLC, to provide city management services for the next 6 months. To give a super short Cliff's Notes level recap, Fire Chief Andrew Baxter resigned because of City Manager Teron Richardson, who then left in 2020 and is now suing the city in a free speech case. City Attorney John Blair stepped in as interim city manager until Chip Boyles was hired a year ago. Boyles abruptly fired Police Chief Rochelle Brackney in September, who since demanded $3 million from the city for what she calls wrongful termination and discrimination. Brackney's termination prompted Mayor Nakiah Walker to drop her re-election campaign, and her condemnation and public reaction convinced Boyles to jump ship. Then, Mark Woolley, who was hired as another interim city manager and would have been the sixth person in the office since 2018, turned down the job in November. It's been a maelstrom of interpersonal hostility and conflicts over race and visions of reform. There are currently seven executive-level positions sitting vacant or filled by acting supervisors. But perhaps Robert C. Bob, a former D.C. city administrator, and his consultants will be the ones to calm the sea.
Mr. Bob is well known for what he does. He has a lot of knowledge of experience.
W. Howard Myers is the former mayor and a current councilman of the city of Petersburg, which hired the firm to help them out of their own financial and management dire straits from 2016 to 2018. The Robert Bob Group charged Petersburg $350,000 for the first 6 months of their services. Myers couldn't recall exactly how much they paid the firm after extending their contract.
It was in excess of six figures, but it was well worth every dime that we spent.
According to the contract posted to the city's website, Charlottesville agreed to pay the Robert Bob Group $155,000 for their services from now until the end of June. That's less than half of what Petersburg paid for the first 6 months, but it's still an increase over what an individual city manager would make. When Boyles left, his salary for an entire year was $209,000. With benefits including retirement contributions and health care rolled in, the city planned to spend a total of about $273,000 on the position annually. The Robert Bob Group did not respond to WMRA's interview requests. Myers said that some Petersburg residents objected to the firm's price tag and their strategies for cutting costs, but he advises
to take heed and to listen and understand what Mr. Bob is trying to do to support Charlottesville. His many, many years of service to the public. There are always someone who may dislike some of his suggestions, but most of his suggestions are for the betterment of the community and the municipality as well.
Rob Alexander, a professor of political science at JMU, said bringing on a consulting firm could also signal to residents and future city manager candidates that Charlottesville is stabilizing.
To buy some time to allow some things to settle down, make sure that the core services are in good shape, you know, come back to a budgeting cycle that is predictable, and then allow the council whose job it is to hire a permanent person to have more time to do so.
But from his perspective, societal wounds have contributed to the high rates of turnover and will need to be addressed for the city to move forward.
We're in the context of much change happening in our both broader societies, but also in this case with Charlottesville, huge community level trauma with the Unite the Right rally and its aftermath. You know, that in itself creates lots of tension, different opinions, different ideas.
In its first meeting of the new year, City Council selected a new mayor, and while much of the councilors' rhetoric centered on team building and togetherness, there was a brief struggle for leadership, as both Lloyd Snook and Michael Payne were put forth as mayoral candidates. Snook won on a 3-2 vote.
I'd like to be the next mayor because I want to lead the recruitment of a good city manager who can lead Charlottesville for a decade or more, a city manager who shares our vision of an equitable and inclusive, high-quality, high-functioning government. A city manager who has the training and experience to help us bring that vision to reality.
How council members will work with one another and maybe someday a fully staffed city remains to be seen. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
And you can learn more about that story at WMRA.org and on the app. Governor Ralph Northam delivered his final State of the Commonwealth address Wednesday night. Virginia Public Radio's David Seidel reports.
His Excellency, the Governor of the Commonwealth.
In a speech that lasted an hour, Ralph Northam rattled off a long list of accomplishments from the past 4 years. Expanded access to Medicaid, a state budget flush with cash, criminal justice and marijuana reforms, and an expanded focus on equity and inclusion.
We are leaving this Commonwealth better than it was when we came into office. We have built a state that does a better job of treating people right. It's more welcoming, it is more open, it's more fair, and it's more equitable.
Northam praised state workers and members of his cabinet, and he thanked the public health and medical professionals who have exhausted themselves over the past 2 years fighting COVID-19. Northam said his goal as governor was always to make lives better.
Let's ask ourselves, are we going to keep up this progress, or will we retreat, become people who are more worried about ourselves than each other? I hope that we will not.
Virginia's 74th governor, Glenn Youngkin, will be inaugurated on Saturday. I'm David Seidel.
Northam's farewell address did not sit well with the new Republican Speaker of the House, Shenandoah Valley Delegate Todd Gilbert. Michael Pope explains why.
Governor Ralph Northam told lawmakers they can't pick and choose history based on how it makes them feel, adding that black children have a right to their history too. Republican Speaker Todd Gilbert says the governor is condescendingly lecturing lawmakers because he read the book Roots and then went on a reconciliation tour.
He is cheered by those who called for his resignation, repeatedly cheered by those who called for his resignation. So I've grown weary of being lectured by matters of race by Ralph Northam.
Senator Adam Eben is a Democrat from Alexandria who says the new speaker is not setting a good tone on the day members of the House unanimously elected him speaker.
I think it's sad that he demeans his office on his first day by engaging in such uncivil dialogue, and it just seems like a really spoiled, petulant attitude to be so resentful of someone who has worked hard to bring Virginia together.
Northam will be stepping down this weekend, returning to his practice as a pediatric neurologist on the Eastern Shore. He plans to start that job, seeing patients on Monday.
Virginia's General Assembly is now in session. Democrats still control the Senate, while Republicans now control the House of Delegates. And Michael has that report.
Republican Delegate Todd Gilbert of Shenandoah County is now Speaker of the House of Delegates, securing a unanimous vote among all members of the chamber, Democrats and Republicans, in a long-standing House tradition of welcoming new speakers with undivided approval. Education is at the top of the agenda for Republicans who want to expand charter schools and fund education savings accounts.
There's an old joke, how many Virginians does it take to screw in a light bulb? Four. One to screw in the light bulb, and three to talk about what a great light bulb the last light bulb was. We can't get stuck in that rut. We can't get stuck in the past. Innovation is the way forward.
Democrats are concerned about the new House rules, which give the Speaker discretion over who gets to participate virtually and who doesn't. Delegate Marcus Simon is a Democrat from Fairfax County.
If he's routinely going to grant folks leave if they're sick, the rules ought to say he will grant it, not he may. And the may being permissive opens the door for shenanigans.
If a close vote is expected, he says the Speaker would have the power to deny Democrats the ability to participate virtually. That could end up being an important way this session functions if Omicron rips through the tightly packed subcommittee rooms with dozens of people gathered in tight confines. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, Michael Pope.
BPM's Megan Pauley has been investigating the effects of direct-to-school debt in Virginia. She spoke with several state lawmakers recently about what they think needs to be done about it.
Richmond Delegate Jeff Bourne supports Senator Ghazala Hashmi's bill to prohibit transcript withholding for students at public Virginia colleges. It's one of the barriers for students trying to finish their degrees. But Bourne also has a lot of questions that he wants more data and information about, like the scope of direct-to-school debt at public universities.
What are colleges and universities doing now to prevent these debts from accumulating? And then how many are offering payment plans? How many are being creative in the way that they work with the student to try and get the debt repaid?
Even Chev, Virginia State Council of Higher Education, needs better data about the system overall. And that information may come in the next year. Lawmakers decided this week that the state's college financial aid system will be the focus of a new study by its legislative research arm. Lawmakers hope that direct-to-school debt will be included.
Megan Pauley reporting. One seat in the House will remain in Democratic hands. Jackie Glass won the special election for Norfolk's 89th House District seat. Early Tuesday night, the Navy veteran led her Republican opponent by more than 60 percentage points in a special election. According to partner station WHRO, Democrats will hold on to the seat that they've controlled for several decades. The seat became vacant in December when Jay Jones announced that he was stepping down a month after winning re-election. Finally today, during the pandemic, the American Shakespeare Center struggled to safely stage plays. Then the company in Stanton grappled with issues surrounding theater management. Now the center has a new creative director and a new style of decision-making. The Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman reports.
The American Shakespeare Center was founded in 1988, the same year Brandon Carter was born. In high school, he discovered Shakespeare and was drawn to the unusual rhythms and poetry of his writing.
I'm a millennial, but, you know, I was raised by my grandparents, so I'm used to sitting at the table, drawing out a conversation, and really sussing things out. There's power in language.
He also discovered performing, but didn't consider a career in theater until college.
I'm from the northern neck of Virginia. I'm from a fishing family, so I never thought I was going to be an artist. But I went to Longwood University, and then I went to Penn State for my master's. I moved to New York after that and ended up back home.
He spent 4 years at the center as an actor on the Blackfriars Theater stage, playing more than 50 roles.
I've been a butler, I've been a fighter, I've been a king. And I think you have to be able to appreciate those roles in order to have the full three-dimensional nature of a king or a Hamlet.
And now he's become the creative director, but he will oversee a company governed by a team committed to diversity and equity. The new season begins next month. The schedule includes Romeo and Juliet, Twelfth Night, The Tempest, and other popular plays by Shakespeare, along with contemporary works. I'm Sandy Hausman.
The American Shakespeare Center is a financial supporter of WMRA. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.